From WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. New Jersey just passed one of the nation's most comprehensive laws to combat the growing opioid and heroin crisis. Tennessee is battling its own opioid epidemic, as is Nebraska, Virginia, Connecticut, Washington State, New York, Wisconsin, Montana. The list goes on. And as we've reported on this program before, Wilmington, North Carolina, and the larger Cape Fear region is near the top of a national list for its abuse of opioids and heroin. ABC News reports that carfentanil, a recent popular and deadly additive to heroin, has been legal in China. Until now, Beijing is banning carfentanil and three similar drugs as of March 1st, closing a major regulatory loophole in the fight to end America's opioid epidemic. American officials hail this move as a sign China takes seriously its role in helping the United States fight this dangerous epidemic. While part of the solution is fighting the supply, law enforcement officials and those in the judicial system are finding innovative ways to deal with the demand side of the equation, those who are addicted to these drugs. With us today to explore how law enforcement's approach is evolving and what's showing promise in this region, Judge Jay Korpening. He is the Chief District Court Judge for the 5th Judicial District, which includes New Hanover and Pender Counties. Judge Korpening, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you, Rachel.
Mitch Cunningham is Deputy Chief of the Wilmington Police Department. Deputy Chief Cunningham, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon.
And we're inviting you to join the conversation. Do you have a question about drug treatment court or law enforcement assisted diversion? Give us a call on this Thursday at 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. Deputy Chief Cunningham, when did the use of heroin really start spiking in this area? When did it become what you would call an epidemic? And is that hyperbole?
No, it's not hyperbole, unfortunately, at all. It is a true epidemic, and it has such widespread impacts on our community, our healthcare system, and of course for law enforcement and the community at large. We saw heroin really become very obvious to us as a real problem around 2012, and it's grown since then and continues to be an ever-growing problem.
And what do you attribute the spike in heroin usage, too? Where did that come from all of a sudden?
Well, a lot of observers have noted that after marijuana was legalized in certain parts of the country, that drug cartels lost a significant portion of the profits. And as a result, they, in 2011, 2012, et cetera, flooded the market with heroin as a way to recoup those profits. And so we're dealing with that aftermath. It's just been an explosive problem for us to and a huge challenge for us to address.
Judge Korpening, drug treatment court is not a new idea. It's something that's been around for a while. When did you start seeing the spike in your courtroom with opioid abuse?
Really, at the same time, it's so cheap and so available. Folks who tried it for the first time, are easily addicted. It is so highly addictive. So we've seen the spike there too. The challenge we have with the treatment court is our resources are limited. We aren't able to take all the folks that need it, but we stay busy.
And when did drug treatment court start in this area?
Gosh, 20 years ago.
Okay. And you started seeing a spike in heroin and opioid abuse around 2012.
Yes. And we've seen lots of other, we've been through the crack cocaine decades, really, I guess.
Exactly.
And that was the big issue we were fighting for so long. But prescription pain medications, the prescription opioids have always been there. And then now we're adding heroin to the real challenging list.
So for those of us who aren't directly touched by it, who are the people who are using heroin? Do they come from one particular sector of our society here? Deputy Chief.
Well, I think it's very broad-based. I think what has been surprising is how deeply affected all parts of the community are. To go back a little bit, we have to remember that much of what drove this epidemic, in addition to the actions by the cartels, was the fact that there was such an explosion of opioids that were prescribed. And when OxyContin was created and was this 12-hour opioid versus some of the other opioids that had been prescribed during the same period, it became extremely popular. And people had such difficulty weaning themselves off. And because of this just large number of pills that would be prescribed for injuries or some kind of underlying medical condition, folks had an easy supply. And so because of that, we've seen just this this group of folks that I think we wouldn't ordinarily think of as addicted. So in some cases, they are functional. But the tragedies that have occurred because of this epidemic have affected all parts of our community.
What are some of the tragedies that you're talking about?
Well, in addition to addicts who they're dying at an unprecedented rate in our community and, of course, around the country, we've had a horrible tragedy just a couple of months ago where a family was driving through Wilmington in the Oleander and Independence area and were struck by an addict who had passed out. In addition to that, had been the subject of multiple revivals by law enforcement and EMS, which really exposed a real gap in our services where, yes, we're happy that we're reviving people with naloxone, which we carry, which the Sheriff's Department carries, but what's being done with them afterwards? And so we have been rapidly addressing this gap in services because of tragedies like this.
Judge Korpening, how are you seeing this opioid epidemic impact the caseload for the Department of Social Services? What are you seeing in your courtroom?
Heroin's driving the train now. We had an increase of over 100 children last year in the last fiscal year over the year before. We're continuing to see cases come at an unprecedented rate, and a significant number involve heroin.
And you're talking about parents who are using heroin, addicted to heroin?
Yes. Parents who law enforcement may respond to the house and both parents are overdosed and the toddler's running around the house or the baby's laying in the bed crying, in the crib crying, and the parents have to be revived with naloxone. That's the kind of case we see where a young mother is shooting up in the stairwell outside of the NICU in the hospital. She's so addicted she can't even just stay with her baby and not use the drug. We had a young dad arrested in the NICU with a trafficking amount of heroin. So it is awful. And we're seeing, just to go back to something Deputy Chief was talking about, there's an image that lots of folks have when you use the word addict. And that's just not accurate. We're seeing folks from all walks of life who have issues, and we have lots of different parents. We have parents who are middle class who are losing their children because of heroin, because of prescription opioid abuse.
Can you connect that for us for a second? How do you go from being middle class, privileged in a sense, to being addicted to heroin? How do you get there?
So I think that lots of those folks start with a pain problem related to surgery or an accident. They're prescribed a prescription opioid, which has been – the prescription opioids have been commonly used now for a number of years. And then they find themselves addicted. They can't do without it. But then a doctor becomes suspicious about addiction and won't prescribe it anymore. Well, they're still addicted, and heroin's available. Then we have some folks who shop for doctors. And until registry is mandated, docs don't always know if they've been prescribed. But lots of times it does start with just a legitimate use of a prescription pain medication.
What are we seeing on the street right now, Deputy Chief Cunningham, in terms of heroin? We've heard about more overdoses and how there seems to be a spike just in the number, not just the people who are using, but the people who are overdosing. What's on the street?
Well, if you're referring to we have open air drug markets that we're addressing with additional resources. We have officers that have been specially trained to carry, as I mentioned before, naloxone. And we have a number of initiatives that are underway to begin addressing a lot of this situation where we are placing people into the criminal justice system when they're much better off being treated as in the treatment program. And we'll hopefully get a chance to talk about the LEAD program and some of the other things we'll be doing.
We absolutely will. That's something we're going to get to in just a few minutes. But I heard from one prosecuting attorney that he thinks there's sort of a double-edged sword with naloxone and Narcan, and this is the antidote to someone who's overdosed. Are you finding that? Are people who are addicted using this as a way to keep using the illegal drug?
Oh, absolutely. We know that that is a phenomenon. And so what needs to happen and what we're trying to build through some of the capacities that the different nonprofits and Trillium and the hospitals, et cetera, are looking at is really post-recovery programming and options and treatment programs. And so, you know, at the moment we reverse somebody, we save their life, that's not the moment you want to talk to somebody. It's afterwards and encourage them to get help.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. We're learning more today about the opioid crisis in southeastern North Carolina and how the judicial system and law enforcement is evolving to deal with it more effectively. Wilmington Deputy Police Chief Mitch Cunningham and Judge Jay Korpening are with us today answering your questions on this Thursday. The phone lines are open. You can call us at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. And when we come back, we're going to hear from someone who has a story about her sister who's dealt with this. You're listening to Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. We're learning today how those in the court system and in law enforcement are dealing with the spike in heroin and opioid abuse in the region. With us on this Thursday to answer your questions, Judge Jay Korpening, Chief District Court Judge of the 5th Judicial District, which includes New Hanover and Pender Counties, and Mitch Cunningham, Deputy Chief of the Wilmington Police Department. If you have a question for our guests, you can reach us today at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. Anonymous from Wilmington, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. Good afternoon.
I guess it is afternoon.
Yes.
Once you start working, you don't realize it.
Sure.
Every afternoon. I think this is a wonderful conversation to talk about this crisis. I'm an individual live in Wilmington, and my sister passed away because of opioids this year.
I'm so sorry.
A great shock to the family that, you know, it's become sort of a topic for the country, and it became very personal quickly and overnight. And unbeknownst to all of us, an addiction had developed. What sort of programs exist in New Hanover County for those that are suffering from depression or have sort of addictive personalities that family members can steer them away from drugs, or what sort of resources exist through law enforcement or through counseling centers in Wilmington are available to help us?
So, don't mean to interrupt you. That's a great question, and we're going to get into some of the evolving, what's available now and how drug treatment court is changing. But can I ask, did you find out after your sister passed that she was suffering from depression?
No, that wasn't a surprise. The addictive personality existed before, but apparently drug use was a secretive endeavor. And when she overdosed, she was alone and therefore died. There was no anecdote available because there was no call for help. So.
Well, thank you for sharing your story with us. And again, I'm so sorry for your loss. We are going to get into to what's available right now, Deputy Chief Cunningham, for someone like that, who, let's say there are people out there who do have a family member that they know is struggling, and maybe they don't know about substance abuse at this point, but there are issues like that. What is out there?
There's a lot, actually. We've got Coastal Horizons. That's a great place to start, and they will be our partner in the LEAD program, by the way. You have Wilmington Treatment Center. They're building some new capacity, new bed space. You have just a newly opened Wilmington Wellness Center on 17th Street, staffed by former and recovering addicts who are there to help. You also have the Harbor, which is a detox facility. And one thing to note, that working 24/7 is a group called Mobile Crisis Team. So if you're a family member and you have concerns about seeing that the person you're concerned about gets immediate attention, gets an immediate assessment, they work 24/7, and they will come out to your house and they will do what they can to encourage this person into treatment. They'll intake them into treatment, and they'll work with the resources that they have access to see that they're placed as much as they can.
And let's get into LEAD first before we get to drug treatment court. So let's say I'm driving and I'm pulled over by an officer, and I have a couple of doses of heroin on me. Am I going to be arrested and charged with a crime?
Very, very possibly. That's exactly what could happen. Under the LEAD program, the idea here is that law enforcement really wants to divert people out of the criminal justice system, where they're better served in a treatment facility. So we are currently working with Coastal Horizons, the North Carolina Harm Reduction Coalition, Trillium, and other partners to replicate a very successful national program that has seen really good results in Seattle, Santa Fe, where addicts with under a certain level of possession are intaked into recovery. And what happens there is you hold that arrest over their head. You say, look, we can arrest you. We can put you into the criminal justice system. However, we think and we hope you understand it, you're better served, of course, by going into treatment. So they're placed into treatment. And one of the key pieces of the LEAD program is the role of the case manager. And this is a person who will ensure that you are constantly managed and monitored. You're just not passed off to a series of different resource options, and it's up to you to continue to stay engaged with them. This case manager really brings a more intensive oversight of the addict, in addition to really understanding that often what the addict needs at the outset is some basics. To get into recovery, you've got to deal with their basic housing need. With what are you going to feed them that night? Toothbrush, just basic elemental needs. And once you begin addressing those, they're more likely to go into treatment.
Who pays for that caseworker? It sounds like this would be a pretty expensive program.
Sure. We're going to do it through the TASC program, which is state-funded through Coastal Horizons. So they will be providing – Coastal Horizons will be providing the case managers. And we as law enforcement, of course, will be gathering the evidence, driving them if necessary, working after hours with the mobile crisis team. They will be playing a role with our LEAD program. So we're in the planning stages. We've been approved to move forward, so we're implementing it. We're working with our partners to prepare a program that will look very much like these other programs that have shown such success in other parts of the country.
Judge Korpening, you said drug treatment court has been around for about 20 years. Before we get to how it's evolving, what is it? How does it work? How do I wind up in drug treatment court?
Most of the folks that we have in our treatment court population are repeat offenders. They're at risk of going to prison. We know that locking away an addict doesn't solve the addiction.
Repeat offenders of what?
Typically drug crimes, but sometimes other crimes as well. Drug addiction drives our property crimes in our community.
So breaking and entering?
Breaking and entering homes, breaking and entering automobiles, which is the hottest craze lately. I see that in our teenage population more than ever, going through cars, looking for stuff that's a quick sell or a quick swap for some medication. So treatment court gives that offender an option to be more intensively supervised, drug tested 3 to 4 times a week. someone, a case manager following up to make sure that they're engaged in their substance abuse treatment, to make sure that they're looking for employment or staying gainfully employed. They come back to court every other week and have a court session where the team, the drug court team, has actually looked at what they've done in the last 2 weeks and then look at either incentives for good work or penalties for sanctions for missteps.
How do they know about missteps?
So they stay in touch with employer, drug testing, whether they've been charged with another crime or not. They have the ability to use even what's become known as quick dips, short periods of incarceration in response to, for example, positive drug screens. But it's a team-based approach for the treatment model to really work intensively with the addict to provide supports and to guide the addict through that recovery process because it's about learning to walk for the rest of your life because addiction doesn't go away.
Why isn't the criminal justice system, the traditional system, not working? Can't you just take someone who's addicted to heroin and put him in a jail cell and they go through some difficult times, but doesn't that clean them up?
So in terms of getting controlled substances out of their system, they don't have the controlled substances in their system. They're still an addict because the brain actually changes, and that isn't solved by a period of incarceration.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. We're talking today about the evolution of drug treatment court to community treatment court, and the introduction of a new law enforcement program that diverts people with addictions from the criminal justice system to treatment. Our guests today, Judge Jay Korpening, Chief District Court Judge of the 5th Judicial District, which includes New Hanover and Pender Counties, and Deputy Chief Mitch Cunningham of the Wilmington Police Department. And they're answering your questions on this Thursday. Have you gone through drug treatment court? Have you won the war against an addiction? What put you on the road to recovery? What keeps you there? You can email us today at coastline@whqr.org or call us at 910-343-1138. Jim from Wilmington, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Okay, thank you for having me.
Sure.
Jim Hammond, I've been in Wilmington about 9-10 years, and I'll probably spend the rest of my years here. But I'm curious. We only have about 119,000 people in Wilmington. Yet, according to a report that was published recently, we're number one in the nation in opiate abuse. We beat New York City,
right.
Population of 7 million plus. We beat L.A. with 3 or 4 million and hundreds, if not thousands, of Mexican gangs and the Mexican cartel. And we're number one. I think someone here in Wilmington is not doing their job. The old saying, what the proof is in the pudding. And who's falling down on doing their job?
It's a good question. Thank you, Jim, for that call. Deputy Chief Cunningham, there are a lot of factors that helped Wilmington reach this place of distinction.
Sure. That was a study done by Castlight,
right.
I believe it was. And I think some observers might have questioned some of the research methods, but I think everyone agrees there's a serious problem here. And, of course, to understand the data proportionally, we're talking about a rate versus—
That's right. It's a percentage of the population that is
right.
abusing these drugs. It's not numbers.
Sure. But, and I think if anything else, that acted as a wake-up call for us to do more and to see that state-level resources and us working together became a priority. And so I'm not sure I've got some folks who have some questions about, as I said, some of the conclusions and upon what data it was based. But the point is, if it acts as a way to help us get resources to address this, then it was valuable.
Judge Korpening, how is drug treatment court changing, and how would you like to see it change over the next few years?
So the first change, in order to more effectively deal with the opioid abuse that we're seeing, is to add the option of medication-assisted treatment. Lots of discussion in treatment world, lots of discussion in the medical world about pros and cons of medication-assisted treatment, but it has evolved into a national best practice to offer in the treatment court setting. Our county likes to fund programs that are best practices, and so in response to that, I felt like we needed to look at that.
When you say our county, are you saying New Hanover?
New Hanover County.
Uh-huh.
New Hanover County is currently funding our drug treatment court. So we're going to offer the medication-assisted treatment. The rest of the evolution that we're looking at is to evolve into what's known as a community recovery court, where we use case management services to match folks with whatever their needs may be. So we'll be able to open the doors of that recovery court to our mentally ill who find themselves involved in the criminal justice system, our veterans who find themselves in our criminal justice system. I've been asked multiple times to start a veterans treatment court to meet the needs of some of our vets. We really don't have the numbers to start a standalone, but with a community recovery court model, we can be inclusive instead of exclusive and find ways to meet the needs of more of our folks who need help, who need guidance through their recovery, whatever the recovery's from.
Has there been resistance in the past to medical-assisted treatment? And what that means is heroin, people who are addicted to heroin, for instance, can take methadone, right?
Okay, methadone, Suboxone, and Subutex are the drugs that are typically used. In the past, there's been lots of opposition to that. But
why? What is the opposition based on?
Folks who are in recovery, and a lot of our folks in Wilmington who have vocalized about this, say that in order to be clean, you've got to be clean. And if you're using medication-assisted treatment, then you're not clean. And I get that, and I respect that. And their recovery has worked for them because clean meant clean. Everybody can't recover that way. And so it's important to offer an option for medication-assisted treatment for the folks who will need that in order to live what we would otherwise describe as a very stable and successful life. Seen that evolve in our DSS caseload in particular, where I used to say years ago, you've got to get off the methadone too. But then what we were seeing is parents who could get their act together, successfully improve their parenting skills, get stable housing, employment. Everything else in their life looks good. They still needed to use methadone. Well, that's still success, and they still needed to have their children with them. And so we've had to evolve in that way, and so I've challenged our drug treatment court team to evolve in that respect and open that option for those folks who need that. And that'll make us more effective in responding to this crisis. The mayor has had a task force that recently asked that the General Assembly fund a standalone opioid treatment court. Our Administrative Office of Courts is not supportive of that unless we're going to statewide. And so, you know, in response to that, I really felt it was important for us to open the door for medication-assisted treatment.
So you're saying this wouldn't be funded by the state at the state level unless there's a statewide community recovery court program. Is that
That's right.
What
the
you're
state,
saying?
The state, our Administrative Office of the Courts policy is that they don't want individual counties or individual districts lobbying General Assembly members for pet projects.
I see.
They want it to be a statewide or a state-led project. Or not to do it. But what we're trying to do is pre-position ourselves so that if we do have the availability of state funding, then I can say, fund me first because we're ready.
Okay, we have some phone calls piling up here. I'm going to get to Bert in a second. But first, I want to read an email from Josh. He writes, what are we doing to soothe race relations as it pertains to drug treatment? African Americans see the ease that most white people are treated with, I think, when it comes to opioids. And they remember how many African Americans were treated in the 80s and 90s. They remember how many African Americans were treated in the 80s and 90s when it comes to crack and other drugs. This tore apart families and continues to do so. The ramifications are absolutely everywhere. This is coming from a white male who has lived in an African American neighborhood in Kansas City, Missouri. Deputy Chief.
Well, what I would say to that is the good news is we're going to see a huge amount of resources come to the area. So we know that Trillium is going to build a 200-bed facility and the Wilmington Treatment Center is building another 100-bed facility. We expect our elected legislators to really be helpful with us in terms of additional resources for different plans. So I think the goal is to see that everybody gets the treatment they need, and I don't think we're going to be resting till that happens.
And we have Bert from Wilmington. Welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Yes, I want to definitely commend the guests there for their efforts that they're putting forward. We need to be more proactive than reactive. They seem like they're really hitting the nail on the head and taking care of business like they do. The Wilmington Police Department is excellent, and the court system here, they seem to be doing the right thing. And I just want to pat them on the back and say, good job, guys. Keep it up.
Thanks for that call, Bert. I'm sure you don't get the people who are ready to offer you kudos as quickly as you get the people who want to pick up.
No, I really appreciate those comments. Thank you very much for that.
Yeah. We have an email from Mike who says, there seems to be a lot of talk about the LEAD program, but it seems to be only talk at this point. Meanwhile, people continue to rotate through the system and get no rehabilitation or simply die on the streets. Our current drug DUI court programs have very low results. Why is LEAD not up and running as it is in Fayetteville?
Well, we're behind Fayetteville. They're actually helping us put together this program. So we've been meeting regularly to get it right. We want to hear from everybody who's going to be impacted. So the district attorney's office is a part of this discussion. And I expect that we'll be up and running within, I'd say, 30 to 60 days. We've still got training to do, but we'll be finalizing our policies. And we've got an MOU that's in draft. So I expect we'll have good news here fairly shortly.
This is very new. It's just now coming into this area. And how long has Fayetteville had the LEAD program going?
They started theirs they went operational, I should say, in November. So we'll be the only second jurisdiction in the state to have it.
In the entire state.
Yeah, so we're really looking forward to it.
From that perspective, Wilmington's ahead of the curve.
I would say so.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. We're talking today about the alarming rise in heroin and opioid abuse in the Cape Fear region and how the courts and law enforcement officers are evolving in the ways they're dealing with it. When we come back from this 90-second break, you'll have one more segment to call in with your question or comment on this Thursday. You can reach us today by email at coastline@whqr.org or by phone at 910-343-1138. You're listening to Coastline. Listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Today, we're learning about the evolution of drug treatment court and how a new program called LEAD is helping law enforcement lighten the load on the criminal justice system and offer needed help to people who are addicted to heroin or opioids. Here to answer your questions on this Thursday are Deputy Chief Mitch Cunningham of the Wilmington Police Department and Judge Jay Korpening, Chief District Court Judge of the 5th Judicial District, which is New Hanover and Pender Counties. Do you have a question or a comment about how the opioid epidemic has affected you? You can call us on this Thursday at 910-343-1138. You can also reach us at coastline@whqr.org. Richard from Las Vegas, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hello, yes. I'm calling in because I used to be affected by the heroin epidemic. I used to be addicted and went through conventional rehab in America here, the MAT, medication-assisted treatment, and I struggled. And then I found out the truth, and the truth is that there's a plant that grows in Africa that is giving people their lives back. It's called ibogaine, and it not only remaps the brain and resets neurotransmitter levels, but it gets to the core of the addiction, which is trauma. Everyone that's addicted to substances, even if it's not substances, addictive behavior, whether it's gambling, sex, shopping, it all stems from trauma. And we're just masking this by prescribing drugs.
Deputy Chief, Judge, hang on a second, Richard. Have either of you heard of this drug before?
I'm not familiar with it.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for that call, Richard. We'll have to look into that and see if we're talking about snake oil or if there's a new promising treatment out there. You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about the rising numbers of with the opioid epidemic. And speaking of numbers, Jim asks, he wants some statistics here. He says, how many deaths due to heroin overdose occurred in 2016? How many addicts have been directed to treatment instead of prison? Any numbers of success rates for these former active addicts? Which he's saying addicts who stay clean for a year or more. And I think we don't have 2016 numbers yet, but we do have recent numbers, Deputy Chief.
Yeah, I can talk about the things that that law enforcement has been involved in. With regards to numbers, really, really proud of our staff with the Wilmington Police Department. They've used naloxone and saved approximately 54 lives. Since we started our program in March of last year, so we're really pleased with that. Now, when you talk about deaths by opioid in New Hanover County in 2015, which is the year we do have numbers for, there was 52 people who lost their lives. That compares with 2014, where it was 37. So you can see there was a significant increase just in 2015 over 2014. So simply underscores the continuing and growing problem that we have. I think in 2014, they're talking about something like 40,000 lives have been lost around the country, either heroin or opioids, just a devastating effect nationally.
40,000 in a year.
I believe that's correct.
Anonymous writes, there's no way to completely stop the heroin epidemic or the war on drugs as a whole. It is simply not possible. There will always be the want to do drugs. There needs to be a focus on harm reduction. The heroin epidemic has more facets than just the crime associated with it, the devastating health care costs, and the toll on the addict's own health. The question is this: do either one of the gentlemen believe there are any benefits to harm reduction services such as needle exchanges? And this actually refers to a program that we did several weeks ago. We had a couple of people who work with NC Harm Reduction on the program, and we talked about their needle exchange program. And you can find that information on our website under Coastline. Judge Korpening, we have heard from people who work in a certain sector of the criminal justice system who've said this is a double-edged sword, giving people naloxone and Narcan, because you're allowing people to just continue using without the fear of overdosing. But don't you want to reduce the harm for people who are using if you can and keep them alive if you can, so that one day perhaps they do get to that point where they say, it's time for me to get clean?
Absolutely. And by reducing the harm, we create opportunities for the LEAD program to work its magic. It's been successful so far in Fayetteville, and I'm very excited about that program because, you know, those first few moments after, or the first short period of time after a revival, the addict isn't wanting to talk to anybody about anything. They're lots of times angry. They don't remember what happened. But then having the LEAD program where the officer can say, all right, well, we're going to take you to this place where you can recover. We're not going to arrest you. We can arrest you later if you're noncompliant. But I think that that's a great model. Anything we can do to change their lives makes the opportunity for recovery better, I think.
And why would a prosecuting attorney say it's a double-edged sword because we're allowing people to just keep using? What harm comes from that?
Well, so we know from the tragedy at the corner of Oleander and Independence that, you know, after being revived four times, I think, you know, a man overdosed and a child died when he crashed his car into the mom's car. That's a serious downside to what we're talking about. So, yes, it to some extent is a double-edged sword. But what the officers are confronted with on the street is save the life or not. And they're there to serve and protect. And I think it's an easy call. You save the life and you be as creative as you can be to develop programs like the LEAD program to respond to meet the needs of those addicts.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. We're talking about the opioid epidemic in the Cape Fear region with Judge Jay Korpening and Deputy Chief Mitch Cunningham. You have a few minutes left to get your question in on this Thursday. 910-343-1138 is the number. You can also reach us at coastline@whqr.org. Vicki from Surf City, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to tell the gentleman that I'm really happy to hear that the criminal justice system is taking a more active role in seeking treatment for addicts than just locking people away, because I'm living proof that that did not work. I was an addict for years, and I was there in Wilmington. I went through withdrawal in the Pender County Jail more than once, ended up going to prison, was on methadone several times, saw many people die. I don't know how I survived, but like they, Suboxone is what did work for me. I've been clean using Suboxone now for 8 years.
Congratulations, Vicki.
Absolutely.
Thank
Absolutely.
You. And it has changed my life, saved my life. I'm in, back in school now, working, and I just wanted to say that I'm really happy to hear that the criminal justice system is realizing that just locking people away doesn't work.
Vicki, what was the final straw for you? What finally made you say, I need to do something about this?
Well, after I got out of prison, I saw someone who I knew from out on the street, and her life was changed. She looked so much better, and she told me about the Suboxone had done it for her. And an addict really doesn't want to be an addict. I've tried many things, and it just takes, sometimes your brain, your body might heal, but your brain won't, you need help. And so when I found out about the Suboxone, I thought, if this doesn't work, I don't know what else I'm going to do, but it worked.
And Vicki, can I ask what you're studying in school? What do you hope to do eventually?
Oh, I'm just finishing my associate's degree that I started 20 years ago. I'm on my last semester.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's fantastic. Vicki, well done. Thank you so much for that call. Listening to Coastline, we're talking about innovative ways that law enforcement, the criminal justice system, is dealing with the opioid epidemic. We have an email. Adrian writes, I've lived in Wilmington for over a decade now and have seen some of the effects of the recent opioid problems firsthand. I'm wondering what our ordinary citizens in New Hanover and the surrounding counties can do to help support recovery efforts, and if there are any organizations in the area where we might be able to contribute either time or money. Well, what a great question, Adrian. Judge Korpening, what can people do to help?
So, you know, some of our treatment centers need volunteers. Our nonprofits who support the recovery community always need both volunteers and contributions.
What are some of the nonprofits that have seen their loads increase because of this epidemic?
Coastal Horizons is drowning in opioids.
Yeah.
And they're probably our biggest.
Yep.
But others are too. Deputy Chief went through the list earlier of the folks who can respond to help these addicts, and they're always in need of financial support, but some of them are able to use volunteers. It's an area where there are not as many opportunities for volunteerism. Go read to a child in elementary school and help that child achieve success, and it's less likely that that child's going to find their way into drug addiction or criminal justice behavior. That's an immediate suggestion.
Can you really make a difference in a child's life just by volunteering and going to read to him on a regular basis?
Every single day, yes, absolutely. To give a child an opportunity to have another adult know that they care can change that child's life. Teaching a child to read early on in elementary school, a child who's behind, and helping that child learn to read, life changer, absolute life changer.
I would just add, number one, let your legislators know how important this is to you. Wilmington has just got a great array of nonprofits out there. Phoenix Hometown Hires, the Link Program, all of the nonprofits that are dealing with the secondary impacts of this epidemic, all of them need help, need support, and I'm sure would welcome volunteer activities. We, within the police department, we have the PAL program, and you ask about relationship building. I've seen it with my own eyes, these young men and women, police officers, working with kids who are trying to overcome so much. Yeah, you can't put a price on a program like that and what it does to help kids and give them options. And they're dealing with some things that most of us probably never have. So ample opportunities for volunteerism here in the Wilmington region.
Some of these treatment programs, LEAD, we've talked about how
part of what makes that special is that there would be caseworkers for individuals who would keep that person accountable and deal with immediate needs and needs that may not be necessarily connected to the drug addiction. That sounds like it costs a lot of money. And we also talked about how, Judge Korpening, you're hoping the state will actually step in and make this community recovery court program a statewide program. But is there any way in this current legislative session that our state lawmakers can actually do something to help?
Well, in fact, they already are. The mayor convened, as Judge Korpening mentioned, a legislative group, and they have been working behind the scenes to really listen to us, see what we need, not only law enforcement, but the treatment community, the community at large. And so Senator Mike Lee and others are putting together a legislative package, and then given the significant problems we have, we'll be bringing that to the floor in Raleigh for assistance.
We have an email from Scott. How many doctors and pharmacists have gone to prison for distributing pain pills in Wilmington?
I could research that, but I can't tell you right now what that number is.
Is there a focus? Are we starting to crack down on the providers of these opioids?
Yeah, that's such a multifaceted issue. For example, the state legislature is really looking at issues such as pain management, you know, really giving strong guidance legislatively about how these doctors are prescribing. That's underway. There's a prescription medicine database. It's currently doctors can access it voluntarily. I know some legislators are looking at making that mandatory like they do in other areas. So we've got this vast supply of opioids that need to be disposed of. Walgreens, for example, in some states actually gives the community the opportunity to dispose them at Walgreens. But we really need the pharmaceutical issue to pharmaceutical industry to really do two things, in my view. Number one, own the need for naloxone. Take the burden off of the taxpayers and off of local government for the cost of naloxone and these recovery drugs. They in some ways started this problem, and they need to meet that problem that they in some ways unwittingly created with resources. So we need more of that. And then secondly, I would hope the pharmaceutical industry would help us get these drugs out of these medicine cabinets and into a disposal system so that people can more effectively manage their drugs, make sure they're not abused by others who take advantage of, in some cases, the elderly, who are unaware that their pills and are being taken from them.
Judge Korpening, just a minute or so left. Why do you think it's important for the general public to understand what's happening on this front? And what would you really like people to remember from this conversation?
I think it's important because the opioid addiction spreads through the general public. Remember the addict that we talked about. That isn't the addict. The addict is your next door neighbor. The addict is sometimes within your own family, like the caller we had before. So I think it's important for all of us to come together and own the problem that we have in our community and come together to work to make things better.
Deputy Chief Mitch Cunningham.
Yeah, I think since we've become involved in this issue, there's just some heartbreaking cases out there. And I think there's a lot of folks who are not really talking about addiction in the family. And we would ask them, you know, look, come forward. Let us help you. You know, if you're struggling with this thing and you've got a great job and you don't want anybody to put you in that category that we talked about, come forward. I mean, look at that woman who had the courage to call us, share her story, right? So take that risk. Let us help you.
It's time for us to drop the stigma around
right.
this. That's this edition of Coastline. Judge Korpening, Deputy Chief Mitch Cunningham, thank you both so much for joining us today.
Absolutely.
Happy to be here.
Coastline's executive producer is Cleve Callison. Producer is Isabel Shepherd. Technical director is Ken Campbell. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at whqr.org or get the podcast on iTunes. Tune in for the rebroadcast of this episode Sunday afternoon at 2. Join us next week for Coastline Live when we look at how to tell fake news from the real thing and theater in the Cape Fear region. Why are so many venues closing? That's Wednesday and Thursday at noon here on HQR News 91.3 FM.
I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.